Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the August 17 edition of Commodity Week. This week, one of our analysts suggested the corn market was building a distribution top. If that is truly the case, it might be the beginning of the end of the highest corn prices. We'll ask what our panel thinks today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Vaclavic of Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Well, let's begin our discussion today with this question. Are you of a mind that the trade, Wayne Nelson, took a rest this week, or that the price of corn is simply high enough that it's working its way through the marketplace to distribute what will be harvested in the coming months?
Well, all of those are right and yet somewhat wrong, Todd. In the first place, we're going to say, yes, the market did take a rest this week. We got to $8.49. We saw that that was a little bit high for this time period, yet until we find out some more what the yields really are. We are taking a break right here because that's a very high price. It's a long-time contract high, and it's going to stay in this range. We think we're in the probably more of the $8.25 to $7.75 until we get a few more yields in. Same way with the beans. You know, they backed off a little bit. And we're seeing with the rains that we saw, we'd like to see a little bit more. And everybody's looking very much forward to see what the results are on the Pro Farmer crop tour next week.
And Mike Zuzolo?
Well, I think, yeah, like Wayne said, Todd, I think the trade, at least the traders that I've spoken with the last couple weeks, especially this last week after the report, they did want to take a rest. It seems like the potential longs don't want to come in until we break the technicals back and they feel like they're buying more of a bargain, more of a dip. Potential shorts, they don't want to take a new position in place, it seems, until we get another run to the upside and test the market and maybe clear out some of the congestion at the higher levels from the day of the report. So I think in the short term, that's exactly right. I think the bigger picture that you're probably bringing up about a distribution-type top is USDA never has given us a zero carryover at the end of the marketing year. So the futures market is doing its job. For me in particular, when I look at the spreads, they suggest that the corn is indeed a follower and that the bull needs to be fed with new information, new fundamental information. It suggests also that the beans really are in the front seat to try and take the corn up or down, that the beans really are the leader at this point in time. That's where this maybe is kind of like 1988 with this change in weather pattern, where there are more and more producers starting to talk about the potential for better bean yields or at least stabilizing bean yields, whereas their corn's already lost. So between the spreads and the exports not coming back, and the big hit in the livestock industry, I think that distribution top has to be talked about. And I think that goes back to, do we have enough feed wheat to continue to compete with corn? I think the short-term answer is yes. What about competitive corn supplies? Do we have supplies from major competitors? And actually, the answer is yes there. We've got major exporters' production number went up 7 million tons by USDA last week to 83 million metric tons. That compares to last August of 65 million metric tons. So we essentially have anywhere from 18 to 20 million tons more of competitor supplies of corn than we did last year at this time. So we do have that competition still sitting out there, and clearly that's still being sucked in by Asia.
September corn this week, by the way, had a high of 804.5. It's low at $7.76¾. The settlement price at $7.98.5 was a penny and a half lower on the week. December futures, and remember these are settlements for the week, and we give you the high and low. It's for the complete trading session. December contract in the corn pit at 807¼, finished down 2 cents. When you look at the soybean market as it relates to corn, and the drought, both. There is only 1 year in the recent drought since 1980 that soybeans have gained in their yield. That happened to be 1988 after the August USDA report. Given the rainfall, Wayne, do you think that can happen again this year?
It's somewhat doubtful. I think we're going to gain on what was actually in the field. I'm not sure we'll gain from what the government is predicting because I think they were being optimistic. You know, it depends on if there are 3-5 or longer maturity bean and we're planted a little bit later. I think that we're going to have some pod fill. We've already, in many areas, had a limited amount of pods because they aborted quite a few. We're having one to a cluster instead of 3-4. But we are going to have some blooming and some new growth on top in some areas. But if they'd already started to turn and they're done, why, it's not going to be quite as much as we'd like. We sure hope we can add, 3-4 bushels to this bean yield with this rain because we really need it to keep our share of the business.
Do you think that those bushels will be added because of the rain or will they be changed because of the number of harvested acres? And there were some different numbers out on harvested acres this week.
Which rumor do we believe? The one that was printed on DTN that said there's 3 million acres less planted than what we thought, or the ones that Ag Resource and Van Trump are throwing out that there was 3 million more acres planted than NASS was talking about? That's the big question here. When we get the numbers reported to the FSA office, and yet we hear that was a rumor that came out of the FSA office, and yet as we talk to people at the FSA office, they said we didn't put any numbers out.
So, Mike, what do you think about those rumors?
Well, the rumors are the rumors, but I do remember back when we were dealing with the acres and the November bean dease corn ratio was certainly suggesting, in my view, to producers to go out and do more beans. I think that maybe the weather took some of that away. So I guess I'd be on the side that we probably have a little bit more harvested acres than less harvested acres. I think, to complement what Wayne was talking about, on the supply side and the yield side, I think that's spot on in my view. And what producers are telling me is that about a third of them are gaining yield right now from these rains, Todd. About two-thirds are pretty much set with the yield they have. If they're not getting rains, then they're still seeing yield declines, even though we haven't seen very hot temperatures. I think the biggest, starkest thing out there on the report last week to me was that we have a new four-year low in global meal stocks-to-use ratios. It's down to 2.4%. Vegetable oil stocks-to-use ratios at a 15-plus year low now at 7.3%. Maybe the market knows that already. Maybe they've dialed that most of that in already. But there's no room to maneuver at this point. I wonder if China can keep buying at the pace they've been buying. So far they have. But when you have 12.6 days of use for world oil meals, you just can't slip in terms of the yield and the potential supply side in the soybeans going into the September report. So I'm kind of the mindset that between the November bean dease corn technicals and that ratio looking like a buy signal for the beans, in my opinion, and these fundamentals and the post-report environment, it's really up to the beans. If we want to get back to 849 dease corn and test that high, it's really up to the beans to do that for us.
September beans this week, by the way, had a high of $16.79¼. The lows at $16.10¼. Settlement price was just 2¼ cents lower at $16.71. November beans at $16.45¾ were up too. Do you agree? Do beans need to lead?
Well, Todd, over $500 meal, they are leading. But if we look at the ratio from corn to beans, they're not leading very hard. You know, we look at that. But the bean numbers, we have the chance. And I think what the biggest thing we're going to have to be watching is what's the weather in South America going to be? And will they be able to get in the field in early September and start planting so they can actually move that up a month of when we need those stocks? That's going to be the big thing to watch.
Mike, a cattle on feed report was released Friday afternoon. Can you go through those numbers and what your assessment looked like, please?
Yeah, it looked like we've got pretty much a neutral report. The marketings were just a hair light, coming in at about 100%. The on-feed as of August 1 came in at 101. That's real close to average analyst estimates. And then the placements were at 90. Average guess, 91.4. Low end was 86.7. One follow-up on what Wayne was just talking about is, in the short term, Todd, it seems like the crop conditions are going to be a big, big factor on Monday's report. Did we get improvement or not? If we don't get improvement on those crop conditions, the trade's really expecting that, in my opinion. If we don't get improvement on the crop conditions on that report, I think that opens the bean upside quite a bit.
And you mean simply for the soybeans, not for the corn?
Absolutely.
All right. And what would you consider an improvement that the trade would find acceptable?
Steady or worse, I think, would be bullish.
All right. Are there anything that either of you think producers and not end users ought to be doing at this time while we're in a lull, what appears to be a lull in the marketplace at a very high price? And we'll start with you, Wayne.
Well, I think that depends on where you're at and what your crop looks like, Todd. I mean, we have some extremely good prices here right now. If I'm in Montgomery County, Indiana, I'm not selling anything more until I see what some of my yields are. If I was in Minnesota, where things look tremendously good, I don't know that I can't push my sales a little bit farther because these are good levels. And if I want to own a bull call spread against some of that, that's fine. But well over $8 corn and close to $17 beans is not a bad price.
Mike?
I think the real point, and we talked about this at the panel meeting Tuscola this past week, Todd, I think the real point producers have to really sit down with themselves and talk with each other about is don't set yourself up for lower yields when you go out and shell corn and have a lower price coming at you in October. That's one of those psychological situations you don't have to deal with, and I don't think you can deal with after having a year like we have right now. You don't need to have to take on that extra risk by having both lower yields and lower prices. And when we're talking about the demand for corn, we're talking about the distribution top that you brought up at the top of the show, and we're talking about the outside markets and the fact that corn's going to have to rely upon ethanol more, not less, because of what it's doing, what the high prices are doing to the livestock industry, makes me very nervous about the downside. So just don't even step into that area.
Pro Farmers Crop Tour is next week. We've mentioned it a couple of times for the closing market report at 2:06 Central Time and then posted to willag.org each and every day. Next week, Chip Flory will be the guest. And then, and I don't recall whether Dave Dickey told me this will be on the pre-opening or the opening market report. We'll do the other leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Chip, of course, will be our guest here on Commodity Week next Friday, and we'll take up what they have found. I'm wondering if either of you have some thoughts about that process and what it might mean to the marketplace. We'll start with you, Mike.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Todd, because right before taping this program, I got a call from a guy up in Westbrook, Illinois, north of I-80, about 25 miles, and you and I were talking about these ring of fire showers in northern Illinois, Minnesota, and in northern Ohio, and it's almost exactly where the crop tour goes. And he called me and he said, I think you two are spot on because I think we're going to have decent yields up here because we were saved by those ring of fire showers. So my initial impression is that I'm not going to take, and I respect Chip and I respect the Pro Farmer Tour, it's not my point, but my point is the path they take, I'm not going to take these numbers really at heart. I'm going to wait till I get some actual yield data from producers all over the place around Labor Day. So it's probably more than likely not going to impact my analysis much at all on the corn especially.
Well, I think that it's going to be very, very interesting, and it's going to give us a much better idea as to what size crop we are trying to ration. That's the reason we haven't went higher at this point in time is we don't know what number we're trying to budget in to start with to figure down how much we do need to ration. And I think Chip and the whole Pro Farmer group, which they do do a good job of refiguring, looking at different places and trying to put averages in for the way the year is, and they will make some adjustments, not just that one individual area, Mike. So, you know, we've been talking to Chip, I think, about 20 years here, and I've generally been on that show, and he has just done a really excellent job.
All right, so we'll have Chip Flory on our program next Friday for Commodity Week after they come off that Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and you can hear Chip each and every afternoon next week during the closing market report. That show begins at 2:06, usually posted up to the website by about 3:15 at WILLAG.org. By the way, my thanks to Dave Dickey, who will be hosting that show next week. As I'll be on the Follow the Corn Crop Tour, bus tour, that is. We won't be following the crop, but we'll be following the crop to the south, heading to New Orleans, along with Jackie Bakes and Dan Zwicker and John Bondurant, who will be one of our panelists next week for our Commodity Week program, along with Jackie and Dan. So that should be a good week. Make sure you visit us online at willag.org. Our panelists here in studio today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities and Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joe Vaclavic will be along in just a bit to take up in the second half of the program. He's with Standard Grain out of Chicago. This is the Friday, August 17 edition of Commodity Week.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. The big news this week was the sizable rainfall that fell across parts of Illinois ahead of a cold front that swept through the state on Thursday. Large areas of southern and central Illinois received over an inch of rain this week. A few spots around Bloomington and Champaign received over 2 inches. Meanwhile, areas west of Springfield and north of Interstate 80 received amounts between 1/4 to 3/4 of an inch. Also this week was cooler, with temperatures running about 4 degrees below normal. Cooler, drier conditions will prevail this weekend and into early next week. Highs will be in the 70s and lows in the 50s, with a warming trend next week. No real chance of rain through the midweek, however. The medium range forecast out to August 30 indicates that temperatures will remain below normal with near normal precipitation. The outlook for September shows an increased risk of above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. The 3-month outlook for September through November shows an increased risk of above normal temperatures and a neutral forecast on the precipitation side. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the August 17 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Our panelists in studio include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joe Vaclavic of Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois, is on the phone line. Joe, thanks for waiting for us this afternoon.
Oh, no problem at all. Glad to be back on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Being patient and being there in Chicago. We've heard a couple of times this week that you guys were all taking the week off and not really doing a lot, just watching the market go a little bit this way and a little bit that way. Was it busier than we suspect it was?
No, it was a very slow week up here, as a matter of fact. I noticed that volumes and some of this stuff have dropped off a little bit this week. You know, if you look at the weekly closes, the beans were really the only thing that made any kind of real move here. So, yeah, kind of a back-and-forth, choppy-type trade. You know, maybe this is a healthy thing for the market one way or the other. You know, if you still want to be bullish this stuff, I think a consolidation or a correction is healthy here.
As we look at that, we have consolidated here or slowed things down immensely. What's it going to take to move this market up or down, you know, as we look at things? Is it going to be some yields or is it going to be some money flow?
I think to me, personally, from where I sit, I feel like the quality of the crop is a known factor right now for the most part, especially with the corn. I really feel like the yields aren't going to get much better than that 123 that the USDA has out. They could get a little bit worse, but I don't think it's going to get a whole lot worse than that. I feel like the production shortfall in corn is really a known factor here. The beans is a little bit different story. I think that this pro-farmer deal is actually really great timing that they're doing this next week. You know, that USDA report only went up through the end of July, and it's nice that they're doing it 3 weeks after, especially after the change in the weather pattern that we saw, you know, after the month of August rolled around. We had some cooler temperatures and some more rain. So, I don't know. There's a couple things that kind of scare me here with all this stuff. If I was a producer or somebody that needed to market some things, one of them that I've been kind of keeping an eye on, as I'm sure you guys have, is the fund position that these guys have in the beans right now. We're within an earshot of record longs in beans for managed money and for fund traders. That really just tells me that if they were to just, you know, pull one card out of this house of cards that is the bean market, I think this thing could really take a tumble here, to be honest with you.
Joe, the bean to end users seem to have come in again. The wheat end users are still buying, maybe not from us here in the United States, but at least the price is right. Have had a lot of questions from clients wondering where the corn end users are, where do they sit on coverage since the July report's out and since the no change in the ethanol mandate. With the elevators, the cattle people, any of the end users you work with, what's their temperature right now?
Cattle people that I've worked with and people that I've talked to and things that I've heard, there's a lot of cattle guys that have coverage out through mid-fall is kind of what it seems like to me. And it's at this point here where we've kind of consolidated that a lot of these guys are trying to figure out whether or not to bite the bullet and buy the $8 corn for coverage beyond that time frame. So I think that's a big question, and I think that a lot of those guys are making those decisions right now. The bean thing, also, one thing I wanted to touch on was the pace of the exports. You know, we're like, you know, I think 25% ahead of schedule here as far as total bean exports go. I think we've already done about half of our new crop exports as far as USDA projections go. So that's why you saw some more strength here in the beans this week. But, yeah, some real tightness there. And the average end user, I think the livestock guy has some more coverage than you might think. And, you know, I guess that's a good thing for those guys moving forward here.
Joe, as we were coming into the beginning of the month of August and prices were reaching the levels, the highest levels, the question oftentimes was, is this it? How quickly does it fade back? So now that we've had a week of the marketplace watching and not playing as much, do you think that this is a consolidation time or that distribution top potentially for the marketplace, one of the two? And are you of a mind that there's more upside or more downside potential in the short term?
Short term, I'd have to be a little bit friendly here, I guess. You know, we had last Friday, you know, what we call a blow-off top where we went up to 849 and then finished lower on the day in the Deese corn. And we really haven't seen, you know, we had a little bit of follow-through, but we're right back to, you know, within 3 cents of the best weekly close we've had here in Deese corn. So I guess short-term, just based on market action, I'm a little bit friendly. Now, longer-term, I have no interest in owning any $8 Deese corn. I have no interest in owning any $16 Nova beans, especially if you're talking in terms of a producer, and there's no carry in the market. You're at all-time high prices. I mean, there's no reason to store anything. There's no reason to not sell as many bushels as you can possibly sell here if you have a handle on your production. If you're worried about the prices going higher, you know, re-own some of this stuff using some deferred contracts. You know, the March bean contract is, you know, almost a buck under Nova beans. You know, the May corn, 7 cents under Deese corn. I just think that there's some opportunities there for producers to do some marketing here, and it really just doesn't make any sense to store anything, guys.
if you're a hog producer out there now and you're about 50% covered, where would you look to cover the rest of your corn?
You know, something that I've noted here during this consolidation phase is what option volatility has done. They've really cheapened up some of these options significantly from Dease corn all the way out through Dease 13. And I think that if I'm any kind of livestock producer, I'd take a real good look at some of these options, even if it's at the money or, you know, anywhere, if you're talking about corn, anywhere from at the money to 50 cents out of the money. Some of the stuff's gotten a little bit cheaper, and I would be willing to jump in and throw that premium out there rather than biting the bullet and buying the cash right now, I think, to be honest with you, just because I think that there's some things here that scare me about owning $8 corn long term. But, you know, if you can make it work on pencil and paper, then, you know, you've got to manage risk and do what's best for the operation. But I do like taking a look at some of those options.
Mike?
Joe, do you have any idea as far as the traders you talk to, whether they've factored in any kind of ethanol mandate waiver into the corn price? Has that been part of the reason we've consolidated, or is that, you know, part of the reason why we had that blow-off top you were talking about?
I think based on what you've seen from the government so far, I don't think there's very many traders that believe that anything's going to change as far as the ethanol mandate goes. Most guys that I know, and including myself, believe that the market's going to take care of this thing long before Washington is going to get its act together and do something about this thing. I mean, the EPA hasn't made any statement on record that I know about as far as this ethanol mandate. I know that Vilsack has talked about it a little bit. The deal that the government did where they were going to buy, you know, meat and fish, whatever they were going to do here this week, $170 million worth, just seems like a deal where they want to score some political points. They're really helping. They're really not solving any problems there, I don't think. So I guess if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say 85% chance says that they never do anything with this ethanol mandate. And that 15% is what would really scare the hell out of me as somebody who's going to grow this stuff. Because, you know, I know that a lot of researchers and analysts have said, well, oh, you know, if they change the ethanol mandate, it's not going to make that big of a difference fundamentally. Let me tell you, if they change this ethanol mandate, I mean, this market is going to fall out of bed before you can blink your eyes. I mean, you'll see corn a dollar and a half lower within three or four trading sessions real easily. And it won't be because demand has fallen off. It's just because big spec money got scared out. And that'll be enough to put a top in this thing for a long, long time. So while it does scare me, I think the odds of something happening with that ethanol mandate is probably not very good.
So you'd be convinced that the big spec money coming out would actually put the top in the market and it wouldn't float back up afterwards to manage the continued distribution?
Absolutely. I mean, if you take this thing a dollar and a half off the highs, I mean, by the time you were able to grind your way back to $8, I mean, you'd be talking about planting record corn acreage again next year, and you'd be talking about South American harvest, and we'd be moved on to something else by then. I mean, you know, it could be a short-lived thing, but I just think that this spec money has a lot bigger influence than a lot of people think.
And finally, and Joe, I'll ask you this question, then the final question for our panelists, too. Joe, you sounded like you were shuck it and truck it for corn. Is that the case for beans, too?
Yes, absolutely. If you want to own it, if you want to store it, you know, do something with the options. There's no carry in the market. There's no reason to store anything.
Wayne Nelson?
Well, we'd have to believe for two reasons we want to do what he says is number one. I think the quality of the crop is going to be very poor. And it's going to be hard to store and keep in condition. And also the way that the crop insurance works, if it has mold, if it has aflatoxin, if it has anything, and you put it in your bin, it ain't covered.
And Mike Zuzalo.
I'd be just in the same camp as Wayne. I respect what Joe's saying, though. I think it really depends on how close you are to Decatur. I think that's the epicenter of the best basis. So the closer you are, maybe the better your basis can improve, Todd. That's really what's going to be about as far as whether Decatur, Illinois, jumps like it did earlier this year and leads the basis up.
Our thanks to Mike Zuzalo and Wayne Nelson and Joe Vaclavic of Standard Grain, Global Commodity Analytics, and L&M Commodities for joining us here on this edition of Commodity Week. That does wrap it up for the 17th day of August. That's a Friday. I'm Todd Gleason.